For information on available airtime and how you can produce and host your own program on this radio station, call WRCA General Manager Stu Fink at 617-492-3300. That's 617-492-3300 to place your program on 1330 WRCA.
The opinions expressed on all WRCA programs are those of the program producers and do not express the views of WRCA, its staff, or management. This is 1330 WRCA Watertown, Boston, a Beasley Broadcast Group station.
America means freedom, and there's no expression of freedom quite so sincere as music. Our next selection is called In the Mood.
Thank you. This is an old tune written by Edgar Sampson, and the arrangement is by Edgar Sampson, and it's called Stomping at the Savoy.
Quotas to be filled on the 5th war loan. Let's not lose any time getting it on the line for those infantrymen on the beaches. And today, June 15th, being Infantry Day, what better way to salute the indomitable spirit of those men who take land and hold it by standing on it than by buying more and more war bonds. You can dig the extra dough by buying less of everything that you think you need. Now's the time to conserve and to stay on the job. You can do that by keeping physically fit. Exercise amply. Eat sparingly, keep yourself in good shape. You hear that, John Scott?
I think you're right, Bing. I'm going to join a gym this very evening.
So fast?
The grass don't grow under my feet.
Too shady.
Should be like me, Mr. Trotter. When I was in grammar school, I can lick any kids my age.
Do you have many fights, Yuki?
No, all the kids my age were in high school.
Annette. So much for biographical data on Yuki. We turn now to the charioteers, and Milkman, keep those bottles quiet.
Can't use that jive on my milk diet. So, milkman, keep those bottles quiet. Been jumping on the swing shift all night, turning up a quota. All right, now I'm beat right down to the sod, and I got to dig myself some nod. Milkman, keep those bottles quiet.
Oh, well, the noise of the river turn now, I don't mind it, cause the man with the whiskers got a lot behind it. Now I can't keep punching with that big groove when you're making me punchy with that bottom. I gotta give my all out if I'm gonna give it, and I gotta get some shut out if I'm gonna rip it. So bail out, but with that milk barrage, it's unpatriotic, it's a sabotage.
Milkman, stop that greedy riot. With those clinks, and I got to get my 40 wings. Milkman, keep those bottles quiet. Milkman, keep those bottles quiet. Keep quiet. Keep quiet.
Good evening. You've reached the zenith of independently produced radio programming for the radio enthusiast. Thanks for tuning in to Tube Talk. My name is Paul Burish. I will be your host for the next hour or so. So sit back and relax. I hope you enjoy our little world here. And I did a little change of pace. We let some actual musicians and entertainers introduce their own music this evening as opposed to having to listen to me. So that was Glenn Miller introducing Glenn Miller and the Army Air Force Band in the Mood. Benny Goodman doing a little introduction to Stomping at the Savoy. And Bing Crosby with his war announcement urging us all on to greater effort towards total victory. And that was the Charioteers with Milkman, Keep Those Bottles Quiet, which is something you don't often hear on the radio. But then again, there's a lot of stuff that goes on this show that you don't always hear on the radio. So that's what it's all about. And, you know, I often wonder about music from World War II. Some of the darkest hours of our nation's history, we managed to put out music that was joyful, inspiring, sometimes a little sad. And, you know, just today in what, you know, we call music, or I guess what passes for music in by modern standards, it's so much angst, anxiety, you know, mean, angry. I know times are tough these days, and I don't really know that it was any better, though, you know, when some of this great music that we listened to on the show was recorded, coming off the Depression and going into World War II, and, you know, we suffered a great deal of defeat early on, especially the very beginning was tough for the U.S., and somehow we could bring ourselves to look, you know, somewhere over the rainbow, and I don't know what's happened today. You know, and I know that the music world consciously, you know, was informed and asked to produce some propaganda, and but, you know, morale was pretty good for World War, and the music was great to dance to, really sweet to listen to, and help keep you on the move, which is a lot more than can be said for what we get today. So, you know, maybe it is too easy for us to feel sorry for ourselves. I don't know. You know, we forget how much we have to be thankful for. And I hope we can take a little time to remember how fortunate we are in many ways today. You know, maybe we'd put out a little better music if we did. So something to keep in mind. Here at Tube Talk, we are thankful for our musical and electronic heritage, all those vacuum tubes manufactured during the heyday of radio that we can still use, and the sets we've inherited and restored to life. And, you know, I thank everyone who's listened into the show. I believe this is just about episode number 20. So I hope you find this program a little different. I hope you find it entertaining. I hope you find it a little fun to listen to. I would really like to hear from you. And you can email us at tubetalk1@gmail.com. TUBETALK, the number 1, at gmail.com. So it's on with a little more music here before we sit down in the comfy, cozy radio parlor with our guest for the night. So on with the music.
Blue skies
shining at me. Nothing but blue skies do I see. Bluebirds humming a song. Nothing but bluebirds all day long. I never saw the sun shining so bright. Never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by. When you're in love, my, how they fly. Blue days, all of them gone. Nothing but blue skies from now on. Never saw the sun shining so bright. Never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by. When you're in love, my, how they fly. Blue days. All of them gone. Nothing but blue skies from now on. Nothing but blue skies from.
Oh, wasn't that nice to listen to? A little Bing Crosby there. And Bing really was Mr. Radio with the Kraft Music Hall and then appearing for Philco after Kraft Music Hall. And he parted ways with their sponsorship agreement. Philco was happy to have Bing, and he showed up in a lot of ads, a lot of great magazine ads. You'll see Bing posing with a Philco, and I guess he was Mr. Philco before Ron Ramirez was. And what a voice, what a rich, deep, beautiful voice to listen to. We're very pleased this evening to be joined by Bob Dobusch from findatube.com. Is that the correct web address, Bob?
Yes, it is.
And Bob is the radio collector's resource. He's the guy, if you need a radio tube, he's got an awful lot of them, and he runs a site, which you can find his price list. You can find out a little bit about Bob, and it's an extensive list. You certainly sound like you have an awful lot of stock, I'll tell you that. And thanks for being on. We appreciate you coming on tonight, Bob.
Well, thank you.
And, you know, maybe you could just, to get started here, we talk a little bit about how you got started in electronics. I know you were telling me that you always had an interest as a kid, and you were building Heathkit. And how old were you when you got into electronics, Bob?
I would say probably about 10 or 11 years old. It started with the usual finding items and trying to fix them. And finally, since we were close to a Heathkit store there in Parma, Ohio, I ended up, you know, buying those kinds of kits and building them, and kind of got me into electronic courses at high school, and then into college, and into the industrial electronics field for a good bit of time. And when I got laid off, that's when I decided to start my own business repairing modern electronic equipment, which then slowly gravitated toward retro audio and radio equipment.
Oh, that's great. You know, you're the second guest I've had on this program who's credited Heathkit. I had another fellow on who lived across the street from a Heathkit store, and he bought a color TV kit. He begged his father to let him buy the kit. He
wow.
spent about a week, he said, day and night putting the thing together. He goes, I plugged it in, and it didn't work. But it fueled his interest, and it got him started. And apparently there was some type of a flaw in that kit, which the guys at the store recognized, and they bailed him out. But anyway, so, you know, it's funny, though, because a lot of people, when I'll talk to them about my hobby, which, you know, is collecting radios, they always wonder, you know, they say, well, how do you find vacuum tubes, you know? And you know, I can't find them in... Where are they? How many are there? Are they rare? Are they hard to find? And I guess you could probably shed some light on that. I mean, how many do you have?
Well, I'd say probably right now, probably between 400,000 and 500,000.
Yikes.
Yeah.
and there were an awful lot manufactured, too, which I think is something that a lot of folks don't have an appreciation for who aren't into the hobby, is that, you know, these companies were just churning these things out left and right for years and years, and there's an awful lot of them still floating around, and you know, they still work just as good, don't they?
Right, as long as the vacuum's still there. If they're in the box and new, they generally work. Industry used them too, if you know, in commercial equipment, so they were ravenous users of vacuum tubes as well. So you're right, there were billions manufactured. And most of the ones you find these days are maybe stock out of an old TV or radio shop. And they're still there out there to be found. It's difficult sometimes to find, but
where do you find most? Where do you find most of yours, Bob, that you wind up reselling?
I would say a good bit are from you know, antique auctions, radio auctions. There's one we have here in the Medina, Ohio area about every month that is a good source for tubes. But you've got to scour auction ads and find out if you see a shop closing or maybe a electrical sales place that's gone out of business and
sure.
try to buy their stock. Unfortunately, though, you get a good bit of tubes that aren't really usable anymore, like for 50s, 60s televisions that are still way too plentiful. It's a little more difficult to get the radio and audio tubes.
Now, the auction end of things, you should have a pretty good, you know, finger on the pulse of. Bob also works with, I believe it's Estes Auctions, as
yes. mm-hmm.
You help them with estate auctions. And what exactly do you do with them? You help them auction off tubes that they acquire through these big estates or guys who are hoarders / collectors?
Well, that's usually what it is. Usually every radio collector's got a stash of tubes, and we sometimes get consignments from someone who might have been in the industry and wants to put some tubes in the auction. And I generally get them tested. We have usually, I'd say, 5,000 to 10,000 tubes total every auction.
Wow, that's a great figure.
And we try to glean the good ones and test the ones that deserve testing. And sell them that way, but we can't certainly test everything.
Oh, I know.
But that's a good source for tubes, as well as some other various auctions here and there across the Midwest and across the country.
Now, as far as the tubes themselves go, I mean, in a lot of collectors' eyes, you know, the tubes sort of symbolizes the whole U.S. radio manufacturing industry. You know, they very fine quality by some manufacturers. It was all made here in the USA. And are there some companies that put out a better tube than others? I know a lot of the radio manufacturers would lead you to believe they were making their own, and they were just having their name, much like private label groceries, I guess, today. They were just having their name put on a tube by one of these big manufacturers. But maybe you could give us a line on who are the real, you know, legitimate manufacturers who put out a great tube, RCA, up there.
RCA,
and
yes, I think RCA would be one of the best ones. General Electric did okay with tubes for a long period of time. They were one of the last to bow out here in this country. Western Electric did their own line of tubes, which are very high quality, desirable for audio and commercial equipment, but they weren't really making tubes for televisions and later radios. And Sylvania was a good company for that. Some of the more minor companies are desirable for tube collectors, but maybe not much for someone who's going to use them in a radio or audio amplifier, like Triad or, well, DeForest had their own line of tubes, which weren't very high quality. Several other companies such as that.
Yeah, up here in the Massachusetts area, I think Sylvania, in addition to having a plant maybe down in, I believe, Pennsylvania, they had one out in Western Mass. Mm-hmm. And we had a small company that sometimes you see their stuff, and I have a few in some sets that I own. They were up in Danvers, Mass. CBS Hitron was up there, and I guess their claim to fame was I think they left a lot of pollution and they cut down a very famous town tree in one of their plants.
Oh.
But that's their claim. And, you know, I've seen on different sites on the web, you know, you'll find folks who chronicle histories of companies and whatnot. And a lot of these companies, you know, they just weren't manufacturing a product. They were actually doing the R&D and all that as well. And, you know, Tungsol, I guess, is a company that maybe didn't produce a lot of vacuum tubes, but some people think awfully high of, and I guess some of their audio output tubes in particular. That was it, the 6550?
Yes, that's one they're noted for.
And they were almost run more like a laboratory, I guess, than an actual company, which is maybe why they didn't produce quite so many as some of the others. But it's interesting stuff, and it's sort of a history of American manufacturing as well as just, you know, related to radio. And, you know, are some tubes really getting hard to find now? I mean, what are some of the rarer ones that, you know, I guess there are some people who just collect tubes. They could care less about radios. They're just trying to fill their tube collections. What's getting tough to get?
Well, these days, the audio output tubes for radio and audio equipment, such as the Type 50 tube, as far as audio goes, the Type KT88, KT66, generally made in England, are very difficult to find these days. Certain versions of certain tubes are very desirable to both audio people and tube collectors, such as tubes with a mesh plate rather than a, you know, just a stamped metal plate.
Uh-huh.
Which are, you know, some say sound, you know, a good bit better. And I'd say 5AR4s, quite a few of the 50s and 60s audio tubes are probably the hottest thing out there right now. And there's just X amount of them out there.
No, and I've mentioned this before on the show, too. It's interesting. We have an electronic store not far from where we are here in Boston, and they're sort of a throwback. You know, they sell all kinds of new TV and DJ equipment, but they have this huge parts department, and they, you know, got out of the vacuum tube business altogether, and they've actually brought back a small display in the store for folks who want them for guitar amps and musical applications. Apparently that's kind of staging a comeback, that people really are intrigued by the nice sound of the amp equipment, and it's sort of a little niche now that's growing almost, the guy was telling me, which is why they brought them back.
Well, yes, in Russia and in China, there's still the audio output tubes are being made, various brands, Svetlana and others, that are getting better and better every year. The initial first run of those wasn't as reliable. They're getting better and better, and the guitar amplifier market is the main user of those tubes.
Now, what's the tube? I've had some people tell me they've had a hard time finding it. It's found in the Zenith Transoceanics, and the number of it escapes me, but there's one tube in particular out of the selection in the Transoceanics that's particularly, you know, sometimes you'll find that you can find them, but they're a little expensive. Is it the one?
Well, there's a 1L6.
Yeah.
1L6, which is a very difficult tube. Also, in some Transoceanics, there's a 50A1 ballast tube. And that is really more difficult than the 1L6 these days.
Yeah, it's interesting because the Transoceanics sort of have a following of their own in the collecting community. You know, find people who've got nothing else. They just collect Transoceanics. They absolutely love the things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I recently picked one up, and the first thing we did is I had a friend of mine who's got a tester. He tested them all out, and he goes, Yep, and that's a functioning one. He said, if you want nothing else out of this set, he said, you could probably, I got the set for $40. He said, you could probably sell the tube for what you paid for the set. But I haven't quite figured out exactly what I'm going to do with it. It's a nice shape, but the speaker's pretty beat up and would probably need to be reconed. And we'll have to, the jury's still out on that. So how is your business? I mean, do you have plenty of folks who come back and are still restoring and need to buy? Or do you notice things are dropping off as the hobby kind of grays? I know a lot of old-timers are some of the big, you know, radio enthusiasts, and they're falling off the wagon, so to speak, as time goes by.
Well, I think I've got a with the website there. I list a lot of very minor and basic and reasonably priced tubes that are used both in radio and television. And I don't really have a minimum order, so I get a lot of orders for people maybe wanting to fix their 50s television or a later radio where the tubes are really expensive, inexpensive. And my orders have been steady here for the last 2 years.
Well, that's great.
Some orders are for $12 or $15, and I fill them because I want to keep the equipment running if I can. And there's also a early television museum there in Hilliard, Ohio, that I'm affiliated with. And that's a source for tubes as well. Sometimes we get, tubes into the museum. And there's plenty of tubes we always need that we're using there to restore the televisions.
You know, it's funny. I had on a fellow from the New Jersey Antique Radio Club not long ago. And, it went very well. We had a nice chat. And Rich Lee was telling me that they have a little subsection of their club. And it's like the tube committee. And apparently what they do is, you know, from old timers who want to, you know, take off, you know, move their stock or clean up their house, or, you know, they know they're not going to be here forever, or they things they find, they go on these radio rescues, you know, if they find tubes or they have pulls that they take out of set, they have a little group within their radio club, and they categorize them all and test them all, and they try to make them available to the members of the club as, sort of a membership benefit, which I thought was kind of a neat thing. Do you ever find people who are really looking for, like, large lots, like people who would wind up reselling them or, for clubs or for club use?
Yes, I do from time to time. Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, just out of curiosity, what's the largest tube order you ever got, or does he remember?
A tube order that was asked of me?
Yeah, what was the biggest one you ever filled?
Oh, it was probably not a tremendous, probably $200 or $2,500 total.
Yeah, that's a sizable amount of stuff, you know.
Yeah, and it was a lot of common items as well. It was a gentleman that was affiliated with some other people, and they got a list together and sent it off to me, and worked out well. I think I had about 98% of it.
Well, that might not be a bad way to do it, too. You know, if you are a member of a group or you have a bunch of pals you collect with, you know, place a bulk order and, you could share it, so to speak, because it's funny. I have a couple of boxes of some of the more commonly used ones and, you know, the All-American 5s and 6s and some of my other sets, some of the Loctals, and, you know, it's not an awful lot. And then I look at it and I say, should I really buy more or, you know, should I just, you know, because then you wonder sometimes, well, the tube supply might last longer than the broadcast radio, AM radio, lasts in the United States, the way things are going. Do you have a feel for, what people's sense are? You go to a lot of auctions. You meet a lot of people. What's the sense of the hobby as a whole? Do you think it's pretty healthy or growing, or do you think it's kind of holding its own? Or some clubs, I know I talk to some of the folks, and they say their membership is shrinking and they don't find as many people still interested in radio.
Well, I think the Internet has sometimes lessened the need for someone to travel to all the meets every year. eBay and other online sources for radios.
Yeah.
Maybe since gasoline is more expensive, that is part of the problem. I think the hobby has dwindled some, but the meets are where you notice it the most. But there's still a good presence of collectors that are perfectly happy to deal with. Shipping a radio or buying a radio needs to be shipped, and sometimes that's more attractive these days with the cost of travel.
Yeah, and, you know, it also is, you know, like you look at a website like the Radio Attic where you can look at lots of different sellers' stuff from all over the country, and, you know, you can do that in the comfort of your living room as opposed to having to hit the road. The meets are fun. It's great to connect with other collectors and share war stories. Where'd you get, you know, where'd you find that? Where'd you get this? How did you fix that one? Did you run into this? And a lot of that still gets, you know, on the Philco forum. You know, there's a service, you know, people can swap that type of information, and on antique radio forums. And it's, I find it interesting that a lot of people turn to the internet to support, you know, the old electronics hobby. Or sometimes you'll see these guys who restore radios, and they have a lot of very high-tech equipment, and it's dedicated to keeping what a lot of people would say is fairly low-tech, old, you know, AM and shortwave broadcast receivers still going. It's this, sort of one of the ironies in the hobby. But, I guess the biggest challenge that we all have is collectors, and I talked to some of the guys who are out, you know, running the meets, and they're trying to do outreach. What do you notice about the age of the folks who are attending some of the auctions and meets? Is it still the older crowd who are less likely to get on the internet, do you think?
I believe so, yes. It's just the way it is, I believe. And as far as the ham radio crowd and the ham fest, they're dwindling just a bit too, but it's still, I would say, a vibrant hobby. We, you know, at the Estes auctions, we have no trouble selling good ham equipment, and that's kind of a worldwide hobby as well.
Yeah, you know, it's a good hobby, and it's an interesting hobby, too, in that it fosters, you know, a very personal level of communications. You know, a lot of guys who are hams have really nice relationships with folks, whether it's on repairs or finding equipment, or just, you know, they chat about everything from sports, politics, the weather, their families, and it's a nice hobby, and it's kind of sad to see that. I had a friend whose dad was a very active ham, and, you know, a lot of his, when he passed away, a lot of his pals came out, and they went over his stuff, and, you know, they offered a fair price to the widow and the whole thing. It's just really, it's interesting. I find a lot of gentlemen in this hobby, you know. And I'd just like to take a minute here, remind everybody, you're listening to Tube Talk on WRCA out of Boston. This is the show for the collector, for the person who still likes music, for the person who still likes to listen to the radio. This is the apex of the independently produced radio experience, or at least I like to believe that myself, if nobody else does. Anyway, maybe you could share. I always like to ask stories of folks who collect radios, or in your case, you know, where you collect the tubes for resale. Did you ever find some in a place that you would never have expected, or did you find something in a very unique situation that yielded you a good find for tubes for your business?
Well, I would probably say the most unusual spot would be a college close to me that I had no idea had any radio or tube equipment, and was presented with a request that I buy their equipment. And that was the most surprising to me, especially since I'd been around that college for 20 years.
That's kind
and
of
never had any idea they had any vintage equipment available, or, you know, that they owned. As far as I'd say the great majority of what I bought came from just private citizens that have maybe been involved with the business. But the college is the one that surprised me the most.
Yeah, that is kind of an interesting finding. You know, sometimes you find some of the neatest stuff at places that are off the beaten path because, of course, all the collectors go to the old radio shops and they go to the swap meets and they go around hunting at the antique stores. And then sometimes you'll find it in a place where you didn't really think it would be. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a trip. Bob, maybe you could just give us a little idea how your website works. If anybody who's listening would like to place an order or check out your list of tubes, it's findatube.com. Is that where they should Google up or enter in as a URL?
Yes, that's the case. Now, I don't do credit cards at the moment, but generally if you find the price for a tube you want, you can pretty much just drop me an email. I'll immediately get you a shipping cost, and you can either PayPal or send the money order personal check. That's what I do. I don't do credit cards at this time. On the earlytelevision.org website, there is a tube list as well that's tubes made available from me that are discounted, and that would be that email address would get you back to my website email address, and I believe that one is earlytelevision.org is that website name.
Okay, well, very good. Well, you're a valuable source in the community, and I thank Ron Ramirez. He suggested I get a hold of you. He thought you'd have some interesting perspective on the radio collecting hobby from the tube angle. And how do you ship? You just ship them out, box them up, and out they go, UPS or U.S. mail. Tubes are pretty durable, and I would think if packed pretty well, that you could probably ship them anywhere in the world.
Right. Generally, I like to ship U.S. Postal Service priority mail. I have the best luck with that. Have almost no fallout from that. And that's what I always suggest rather than parcel post, which takes a bit longer and is just a little cheaper. But priority mail is the best way to go, I believe. And that's the way I usually would recommend.
Well, Bob, thanks for being on the program. I appreciate your time. And keep the tubes glowing and keep supplying them to us collectors. It's the lifeblood. We've got to have it, along with our capacitors and resistors. It's great to know we've got a good resource for tube. Thanks for being on, Bob.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're going to venture into onto shaky ground here. You know, some of the true radio enthusiasts who really like their 30s and 40s stuff may not be too happy with me here, but here we go. We've got the Zenith C845 all warmed out, and if you've ever seen that, it's a fairly large table set. Has a plastic grill with a big sort of silver painted circular circle on the front of it, and it's got an 8-inch mid-range speaker. It's a nice 2-inch tweeter, a high-fidelity Zenith, 8-tube, still hand-wired, made in the USA, 1962, I guess, is vintage on that one. So it's not too much of a stretch to say we could put on that nice hi-fi Zenith and listen to a little Dionne Warwick.
The moment I wake up, before I put on my makeup, I say a little prayer for you. Walk home in my hair now, and wondering what dress to wear now, I say a little prayer for you. Forever, forever, you stay in my heart, and I will love you forever and ever. We never will part, oh how I'll love you together. run for the bus, dear. While riding, I think of us, dear. I say a little prayer for you. At work, I just take time. And all through my coffee break time, I say a little prayer for you.
'60s there, a very pretty voice, some pretty music, and a pretty thought as well. And, you know, as I was opining earlier in the program, you know, just what has happened to the music scene. You know, we have made progress, have we? I don't know. Dionne Warwick is available, I believe, now on the, she's running some kind of a psychic hotline, so I don't necessarily know how much singing she's doing these days, but we can recapture some of her better moments right here on Tube Talk on WRCA Radio. Now, you know, we're getting to that time of the year here, and I know some stations, a lot of cities have FM radio stations where they go right into the holiday music, you know, with a frenzy, you know, they just go for it, and that's all they're going to play all year, you know, till the end of the year now. Is you're going to hear these mishmashes of computerized, computer-generated lists of holiday music that they think you want to hear. Well, we've got some good stuff for you here on Tube Talk with Bing Crosby and Ella Fitzgerald. And I hope you enjoy this because you'll only hear it here. It's a real nifty version of Rudolph.
Well, you know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen. But do you recall the most famous reindeer of all?
Is it Herman?
No.
Is it Sherman?
No.
Is it Eddie? Is it Freddie?
No.
Is it Hart? Is it Schaffner? Is it Mox, perhaps?
Oh, you'll never, never guess it. Don't snap your cap.
Talking about Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer.
Oh, him.
Had a very shiny nose.
So I've heard. They say if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows.
Like a hot radish. All of the other reindeers used to laugh and call him names.
Rudolph is a red nose.
They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer games.
Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, Rudolph, I say Rudolph with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight?
Then how the reindeers loved him, and they shouted out with
glee, Rudolph, Rudolph, Rudolph!
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer,
you go down in history with his pink proboscis, his hairy snoot, his bugle that glowed like a lighted cheroot.
With his pink bazoo, he guided the sleigh.
He's a hero!
Why, Rudolph saved the day.
Hey!
Rudolph has got his red nose in the Reindeer Hall of Fame.
Rudolph's the red nose favorite. of the little reindeer days.
Rudolph the North Pole Big Shot rides around in Santa's sleigh,
wearing a green fedora, smoking a cigar all day.
This story has a moral, anyone can plainly see.
Just keep your red nose a-gleaming, you go down in history.
If you keep your nose a red, red rose.
If you keep your beak all pink and sleek.
And if you keep your snars maroon, because
you'll go down in history.
Silver bells, silver bells, it's Christmas time in the city. Ring-a-ling, hear them sing. Soon it will be Christmas Day. City sidewalks, busy sidewalks, dressed in holiday style. In the air, there's a feeling of Christmas.
Hear the snow crash, see the kids rush. This is Santa's big day. And above all this bustle, you hear.
The corner Santa Claus,
silver bells,
is busy now because
it's Christmas time in the city.
Ring-a-ling,
it fills the winter air.
Hear them ring,
you hear it everywhere.
Soon it will be Christmas Day.
City sidewalks, busy sidewalks, dressed in holiday style. In the air, there's a feeling of Christmas. Children laughing, people passing, meeting smile after smile. Very soon it will be Christmas Day.
What a very nice duet from the era when duets were actually sung by two singers in a band singing together at the same time, as opposed to through the wonders of the computerized recording industry. Those were first broadcast December 18th, 1952. If you'd like to email us here at the show, our email address is tubetalk1@gmail.com. That's T-U-B-E-T-A-L-K, the number one, at gmail.com. I feel like a curmudgeon tonight. I'm constantly whining and complaining about the state of the mod music industry and what we get to listen to. I don't know. I think I'm just far too young to be sounding this crusty. Anyway, here's something a little different.
Look, Jake, don't get me confused right off now from the very first. Just tell me, how do you like being here on the bandwagon?
Oh, well, first I got to get one thing straight. How much do you pay for me to play under the bandwagon?
No, no, Chico, not the bandwagon. It's bandwagon. We all buy bonds, and we've done what we could here on the bandwagon to sell bonds. But this happens to be the bandwagon.
So that's what I say. How much do you pay for me to play under the bandwagon?
Oh, what's the use? I give up.
Yeah, it's just what I want to know. How much are you going to give up?
Well, Chico, what do you usually charge for playing?
Well, for playing, $10 an hour.
Well, what do you charge for not playing?
$20 an hour.
Well, what do you charge for rehearsing?
$30 an hour.
Now, wait a minute, Chico. What do you charge for not rehearsing?
Oh, that runs into money.
Well, look, Chico, how much will it cost if you don't rehearse and if you don't play?
You couldn't afford it.
Well, what would you charge to drop into an open manhole?
Just the cover charge.
Why don't you drop in sometime?
Sewer. That cleans that up pretty good, eh?
I see what you mean. Well, let's see now. Why don't we just drop this whole thing and call on Skip Nelson to come over here and sing that beautiful ballad, Velvet Moon.
There's a satin sky above, dipping blue to the blue, a bed for the velvet moon. There's a mountain made of mist, feather bed to the red, caressing the velvet moon. I see the Milky Way, her negligee, a vision of sheer delight, silvery white. And there upon her breast, a necklace of stars that enchants the night. And as I hold you tightly, I hear music everywhere, symphonies, rhapsodies that comfort the velvet moon. So that it may gently creep into sleep, deep in dreams, and so into the dawning, as the moon dreams above, we two can dream of our love. Here is paradise for two, neath our blue velvet moon.
That was Skip Nelson with the Chico Mock Orchestra. Thanks for listening to Tube Talk tonight. We hope to see you next week. Thanks again for listening. If you'd like to drop us an email, it's tubetalk1@gmail.com. Thank you.
member of the Beasley Broadcast Group. This is 1330 WRCA, Watertown, Boston.